Okay, we have board time on Wednesday, June 10th at 3:36.
Okay, because we got staff here for some of these items, Mark, you can suggest which one we tackle here to minimize the
okay.
staff.
Okay, coincidentally, they're in the proper order. We have Carolyn Hennigus here to talk about Councillor Mielke's question during our hearing on Yakult Mountain.
Okay.
The traffic improvements that are underway that we talked about in board time a number of weeks ago.
Okay.
And so she's here to give an update on what we're doing there.
Okay. All right.
So, Carolyn?
So we have a couple of things going on with our traffic crews, some restriping at Gabriel and Kelly Road, and then also looking at installing truck entering highway signs down on Lucia Falls. And then we are also gearing up to do a project at the intersection, so working with the operator and negotiating for that to move forward.
Okay, you're talking about the intersection of
Kelly and Lucia Falls, yes.
Falls, mm-hmm. Which is to buy some right of way there, add some that extra acceleration right turn lane, increasing the radius.
It'll be I think we're looking at increasing the radius. I don't think there's an actual acceleration lane, but there is a scope for the project already and an estimate, yes.
Mm-hmm. And I read through that, and that was actually part of the conditional use that they agreed to.
Correct.
And it was zeroed in. They are not in compliance. So who's going to pay for that?
We actually are going to work with them so that they can participate in the project. They'll be actually constructing it for us. I believe that's what we're going to try and negotiate.
So that's moving and looks optimistic.
Except it's supposed to go this direction.
That's what they turned in for approval, which was
wrong.
So if you flip the page, then our project initial scope is there.
So
why would you have to pay it for?
Because it was a condition of approval, they had to make sure that happened in order for them to do business.
The condition actually, word for word, said that they would turn in documentation showing that the radius was adequate.
And it's not.
And they turned in documentation that is incorrect.
Why is it not adequate?
It was the wrong part of the intersection that they looked at.
They turned in this showing a radius for a
Tyson
truck coming east. The applicant at the time, who I believe was Raji. So the documentation that they turned in as part of their
2002.
Permit. Correct. So they never actually showed adequate turning radius going west to north.
Right.
And that's what they needed to do. So technically, I think they didn't comply with that condition.
Yeah. And that was a specific, itemized, clearly specified by the hearings examiner. They had to do that as a condition of approval, and it specified which direction, and they did not do it. So I'm assuming they're operating on grace right now because they're still operating, and it's not done.
And they are working with county willingly to rectify it. So.
And what's the time frame?
I went to our engineering staff. There is some engineering that needs to be done, and it looks like we will be attacking that this fall and delivering it in the spring because we have to make utilities move. We have to deal with right-of-way issues. So it's not a quickie, you know, next week kind of thing. So we want to make sure you knew that this timeline is going to take a little while. And I know citizens are anxious out there. It's moving forward, but it's going to take till probably spring.
So when they get all done with making that corner, they won't have to cross over the center line?
Correct. That is absolutely correct.
That must be the only place in the county that trucks don't have to cross over the line then. Good job.
That was all worked out as a condition of approval. So they got time, you got price, or cost. Who pays?
We're in negotiations with them and to settle on the agreement.
Okay. If it's a condition of approval, how could they negotiate anything other than them fixing it?
Well, the complicating factor is this project's already been granted approval. And so the original person who was subject to this provision has already gotten their permit. So at this point, your ability to enforce that condition, especially if you're dealing with subsequent parties or lessees of the original party, is much more difficult. And so I will just say it's difficult. And if this were performance approval, to say that they could only operate on roads for which there was adequate turning movement, then you could always enforce it. But typically, but this condition is enforced as a precondition to getting final site plan or final CUP approval, and they've already got it now. So there's nothing for them to wait for the county to give them. That's why you're going to try and negotiate with them, is to say you should have done this
12 years ago.
12 whatever period ago. You know, that it still needs to get fixed. This is still an issue. You're still operating, and we'll work towards that direction. It's okay. Just not as simple.
Okay.
And I would say they were very open to the discussion and willing to work with us. I don't anticipate hitting, you know, a difficult spot to move this forward.
Okay. So. Related to this, turning radius, like the video that Livingston Mountain brought and showed us, this would create a similar condition in what they have there, that the stop sign has to be so far back that you can't stop there. You have to roll through that stop sign to get to the point where now you're up closer to the Lucia Falls Road, that you can see if ongoing traffic is coming. So the question is, how do you turn that into a yield there, or would there be a stop bar painted across? How do you make it so that they can comply with the law, be efficient, and be safe?
So this is a different location?
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm confused. At Livingston Mountain?
Yeah. Just wondering how you're going to keep them from rolling through the stop sign at the bottom.
Right.
Of the
well, that
you'll have a stop ahead, then you'll have a stop sign.
Yes.
But
which
then, if the stop sign's back here, they can't see whether traffic is coming either direction, so they have to roll forward, so until they can see adequately.
They're not going to stop twice.
So then, Heath was talking about putting a big white stop bar here that would. They'd see the stop sign, they'd stop at the white stop bar, and then when it's safe to go, then they would enter Lucia Falls.
Right. So if you look at the drawing that is in the back, this is the Gabriel, Kelly. I would anticipate the striping and the stop bar to look something like that. And we've actually measured their side distance, and they have adequate side distance for the 40-mile-an-hour road Lucia Falls is posted at. So I would anticipate it, and I don't know if anybody else needs to see this, but that the stop bar have two parts to it with that flattened radius.
Yeah, so this is for a left turn, that's for the
correct.
Right turn.
That's
and then
correct.
The stop sign would actually be located back here? You wouldn't put it right there.
We're not talking about that. We're talking about Gabriel Road now.
I know, but this is an example.
It's an example.
Yeah. So what's the line of sight at Gabriel?
Mm-hmm. We measured it all the locations, and they meet sight distance.
You don't know what that is, though.
I have a whole big file folder on my desk that says it, but I don't have it with me.
480 feet?
It should be 400. If it's at, what's the speed limit?
Lucia is posted at 40, and Kelly is unposted. Remember, that's the basic
rule. I think they're on 55. 503, I think it's 55.
State highway is 55, but this is a basic rural road, which means that the legal speed limit is 50.
So
on Kelly.
We're talking about Kelly. Okay.
Lucia Falls is 40.
Lucia's 40.
Okay, so I brought that up because there was some work to be done there at Gabriel Road also. That never got done. The southbound line of sight never got done, and instead they went in there and drew the new lines and did environmental services, then went back and bought that corner and changed the line of sight to the north. So I don't know.
We measured it at that location, even though it's a state highway, and it meets. They actually did a design deviation. We went through this when we presented in April. Mm-hmm. They went through a design deviation process to say they would be just short of what the required sight distance would be. And I want to say at 503 and Gabriel.
Okay.
But we actually measured it, and they meet sight distance, even though they thought they would not.
Because the state was involved.
Correct.
They were going to make the change to move the pole, pole.
Yeah, what had happened was the condition was imposed on the original applicant. The state came through when they were in for final site plan approval and said, we have this on our road or our construction plan, and told the county in written documentation that we didn't have to enforce the condition, that they were going to build. after they got through final site plan approval, the state found out they didn't have near as much money as they thought they did, and all of a sudden the county got whipsawed, and now we're left without this condition. So we went back with both the state and the applicant and worked with the neighboring property owner to try to get access. Actually, I don't think DES bought that access. I think
to the north they did.
Okay, I'm talking about,
to the south.
It would have been the southeast corner of the intersection is where I'm talking about,
right,
that was acquired, and that was not by DES. But ultimately, there was some improvements made. It was not done through the state. It was some work that the applicant together with the county did together to try to implement something that was better. I'm not sure if it was all of what the condition required, but it was pretty close. And like I said, it was a bad situation that the county got put into, not really by its own doing, other than we trusted the state.
And the point I'm making is that the line of sight to the south has not been changed, and no change whatsoever. They had a problem with that landowner, and at some type of an estate. And during all that discussion, Environmental Services went out there, bought the property to the northeast corner, side of the corner, and cleaned back the line of sight to the north. South has never been addressed.
So what I found when I researched the records was that the land was purchased in the northeast corner, and easement for side distance was purchased in the southeast corner. And so that allowed the project to move forward, and so today it meets the side distance requirements. So the Rachi came out and did the construction.
There's no change. I live out there. There's no change. You said the state bought the corner to the southeast?
It's in Clark County's name. There's an easement in the southeast corner, and right-of-way was purchased in the northeast corner, or traded, or whatever agreement they negotiated. But it's not in the state's name. It's in the county's.
Okay. So can I go over the items of this?
The recommendation?
The first one I want is to point out an error. Report, it says the inquiry, Yakult Mountain Quarry, reduced speed four trucks to 35. That was not the inquiry. I have a copy of the email that I gave to Heath. It says change the speed limit of Kelly Road from 50 to 35 for two reasons, it states here, site distance and downhill grade. So certainly, and this goes on to say, argue that it's not a good idea to change the site, the speed for trucks. And certainly we didn't want that. It would cause people to try to pass the slow trucks. You don't want to have it. So it was misinterpreted. The response also says that in July there will be another study. And the question is, are we on track to do that? To check the speed, because if there's a speed reduction, it's to be based on a study.
We completed the study.
I know there was one that was completed, but it said there will be one more in July.
Because we wanted to wait until the trucks were hauling during the main construction
more traffic
season, right? So we haven't done that yet this summer.
Okay. All right. And the question is, can we still do that?
Absolutely.
That'd be great. I want to make sure that we are asking the right questions for the right reason, not for trucks only, because that would be dangerous, but for to go from 50 to 35 based on site distance and based on the downhill grade. So we just want to make sure that those
for all
vehicles. Yeah.
So the study, I guess what I recommended in here is that we do redo the speed part of the study. But we would not go out and measure site distance down a farm-to-market road and kind of start looking at the new standards. He's explained that really we would not take a farm-to-market road and hold it against all of today's standards. And I know the citizens like to do that, and they talk about that from driveway site distance, that kind of thing. But it's not appropriate, really, to do that for a rural roadway, because you couldn't afford to fix them all.
Well, here's the thing. we certainly don't want to propose to change everything and go out and have farm, you know, just simply open up the category to be the countywide. That would be silly. This is, we have hundreds of trucks in a special situation on this one road that is unique. And for those, that exception, where you've got a number of driveways with neighbors that are sounding the alarm for years, saying, we don't have enough sight distance, the trucks are going too fast, you haven't taken into account the special conditions out here. Those are the conditions that we want to make sure that we really get to address in that study.
I understand what you're sharing. What I want to make sure you understand the process about funding and a road improvement. So if we find, for example, that there are improvements that are needed in that segment of road, we would prioritize that against other areas of the county with accident data. And so the way we look at these rural locations or spot locations of segments of roads or intersections, we actually do segments separately than intersections, we rank them based on the type of traffic they're getting, the volume of traffic they're getting, and accident data. And then we use that combination of factors to actually move it forward to fund. And so the hearings examiner considered the roadway character and the design of the roadway during the land use process. And we are not seeing the accident levels that would raise it up to something we would spend county road fund to improve.
And it's not a request to improve the road.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a request to resign the road in order to, based on the study and based on the actual sight distances that are out there, it's in response. Because certainly if we wait till we have somebody gets killed out there, we'll likely get sued because we didn't respond to numerous requests over the years that says this is going to happen. We didn't do it, and it would be too late for us to say, now that we have some statistics, maybe we have a basis to do something. So I'm thinking proactively, we're being forewarned. It's a dangerous situation out there. At least I'm not saying that is, but I'm saying that citizens that live out there are telling us it is, and that we should ensure that we proactively do our study, seriously consider, and make a very careful choice as to why we wouldn't ensure that the sight distance and speed parameters are aligned.
Let me go back. We looked into this before, and I think it was when Mr. Schulte was here. He went up there and he reviewed the whole situation and said that the trucks are not speeding. That they're coming off the hill at 25 miles an hour in a 50 zone.
So we,
it's not the trucks that are.
We can provide the history of the study of Kelly Road.
Yeah, and
we have done.
And then Heath, our director, went up there, and he followed the trucks down the road, and said, they're not even doing the speed limit. So I'm not quite sure what you. You're going to lower a speed limit where the trucks don't even go.
As I understand it, we don't have to work out the details here. I just want to see that the original plan to do the study in July to look at those is still in the works.
So is that the original? When did we decide that?
In April. April 22nd is when we came to
And if I understand also the way the speed limits are normally set, it's 85 percentile that if the trucks and the vehicles are normally going 35, you would normally use that as the gauge. So if they're going slower, it's an argument to put a slower speed limit on there. So it's not a question of are they speeding. It's a question of what is the traffic doing as a self-govern out there, and that would inform us as to what would be appropriate.
And if I remember the numbers correctly, the trucks were doing around 40, and the vehicles were doing 50 to 55.
It says the trucks were 38.
That's close to 40.
On the hill.
So anyway, whatever it is, we want to make sure that we have that proceeds. And
so why are we not accepting the other research that we did?
What's that? Well, the other ones. There are other points here, and on those, it sounds like we're already in the works.
What page is that?
This is the Public Works report on the second page.
Yeah. So which bullet are we on now?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's the one, all these bullets here.
Okay.
So the second bullet.
Recommended doing?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whose report is this? I don't
from Public Works. Here, I'll share it with you.
And your packet.
Here's an extra
copy.
April?
We discussed this at board time, and the board took a vote on whether to authorize public.
Was that the one I missed? I don't remember about making any decisions about going back and redoing it. We've already done it.
No, right there. 22nd.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I just wanted to see, time frame wise and status wise, for each of those bullets. I assume the first bullet is done?
Yes.
And the second one, can you give us the time frame of each of those bullets?
No, the board
status.
Voted on it.
Second one's done.
Yep.
Done? Good.
Third one's done.
Fourth one's done.
And
fifth one is pending. I just checked. That's a newer thing. And then the accident data would be on an annual basis, and then we will be going back out to review speed.
Okay, very
well,
good.
And let me add that this was just what we were going to do. We've done a number of things on Kelly Road in past years. So we've had our engineers go up there and do the plumb bob test or whatever it's called for the
ball bank for the
corners. And we've moved the warning signs caution signs. Because they weren't in the best location, according to the engineers, for warning when the curves are coming. So there's the yellow signs that say slow down to 35 mm-hmm. because there's a corner coming. So we move those to better locations. And then also Mr. Rogers requested that we had the stop ahead signs because you come down the hill to the Lucian Falls intersection. Mm-hmm. So we cleared some vegetation and put warning stop ahead signs in a more noticeable, better place up ahead of the intersection. So we have changed and reconfigured and done some things on Kelly Road in the past, but these were new things that came in April.
Okay. Well, very good. That's I'm glad to hear that. So thank you very, very much for making such progress out there. That's terrific. And I have on my list here as a follow-through to clearly state the concerns so that you can make sure that when you do that study in July that you have at least the feedback that I have to make sure that each one of those are addressed, okay?
Perfect.
Thank you so much. Okay, does that wrap up that 1.2? We can move on to 1.3. That's you, Don, and
Axel.
Mark.
Yeah, my name keeps appearing next to that, but Axel drafted with the help of Marty and some others, the initial version of that job description, and I think Councilor Mador, asked Director Benton to review it.
Hang on just a sec. And just related to this, the minutes that we're about to approve a little bit later.
I have a different agenda that I was given.
Okay. So the minutes that we're about to approve a little bit later, that is under this topic, second to last sentence. Milky suggested Mador to make the changes to the draft and bring them back next week, and Mador accepted the task. So I did the smart thing, I passed it on. So Axel, you did a great job preparing the original draft for this position, and it looked like the question is, who's this person going to report to? And the consensus, as I probed behind the scenes here, is that DES, because so much of this has to do with environmental quality stuff, that would be your department. And so you you refined that proposed position and have feedback as how much that makes sense. So welcome that.
But you didn't probe me. Because I'm not sure
except in an open meeting.
I'm not sure that environmental services is the right location for it. So let me just put that out there.
Okay.
In fact, I'm pretty sure it's not the right place for it. But
well, I checked with Bob Stevens, with Mark McCauley, and with John, and so in order to get input, and I hit pay dirt. So, as a proposal, it's still a draft.
Sure. The job description was very well written. I made very minor changes to it. As I told you in my response, Axel did an excellent job of what needs to be done there. I made some minor changes to it to fine-tune it to who they would report to and whether or not they need to have a building inspector background, and they don't. I mean, we're not inspecting buildings. So we already have one enforcement officer in my department. That's all we have for all of clean water and habitat and everything. That's what we do. And all the complaints pretty much on the quarries have been funneled to him over the years, if not to Axel.
Yeah, I've worked with Scott a lot.
Yeah, so Scott's very familiar. I had a discussion with Scott, my current code enforcement officer, about it. And he thought that it naturally resided in our department because most all of the concerns are environmental, other than the road concerns you heard here, which are public works concerns. But you know, how much dust on the road, silt on the bridges, you know, dirty runoff running into the streams, too many trucks leaving the quarry each day, whether or not they have a proper wash, wheelbase washing, you know, for the trucks to cut down on the dust. All those things are environmental issues, whether it's noise, dust, dirt, inappropriate runoff. They're all environmental department issues, and our guys are trained on the laws on those issues already, and so it's a natural place to train a new person to enforce those laws. So rather than to create a new position somewhere else that goes out and does code enforcement, it would be natural for us to do the environmental enforcement.
There are other aspects to this position, however, that have nothing to do with the environment.
Oh, no doubt. It's a pretty wide range of responsibilities.
So, yeah, the dilemma here is that some of it's transportation, some of it's environmental services, some of it's typical code enforcement. You got to put it someplace, and you got to fund it somehow. And you want to put the position in a place where there's some organizational competence in the area. And, you know, Don just explained why he has that competence in his group. Marty has it in his. Heath probably less so. He has no enforcement,
really. The road part of it, certainly.
Except by giving money to the sheriff for traffic law enforcement. So.
So
we give money to the sheriff for that.
We do. Yeah, a substantial sum.
Go ahead, Jeannie.
So right now we have a lot of issues with quarries, and there are every kind of issue that you just talked about can be related to the quarry. I think that the job description that we're creating it to be too specific. I'd like to see it, I'd like to see it in our regular code enforcement as a separate officer that maybe still has some of the environmental skills, so that what we could see in the long run is as we get the quarries more and more, get a big overview of those, get some micro overviews of the individual quarries, start working to get some of the quarry issues straightened out, that person, and with that breadth of knowledge and experience, could go on to do other kinds of these specialized, more I don't want to say more complicated, because code enforcement can have all kinds of complications as well. And that's one reason why I don't necessarily want to write down the specifications for the job qualifications, because what I'd like to do is add somebody that could transition to a regular full-time job. I don't recall if this is like a 2-year position. I think that's what we were talking about. But I'd like to see somebody that could easily, if we find we have other uses for them, transition in the broader for other kinds of difficult projects, including a lot of other kinds of developments that required conditional use permits that might be environmental, they might be all kinds of things.
Right. This isn't just limited to surface mining. This is any special conditional use permit that the county grants. for which special attention is required. Because what happens is a conditional use permit frequently is approved. It gets put on a shelf.
Well,
there's 137 different requirements.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And there are transportation requirements that we maybe inadvertently sign off on that were never accomplished, which come back and haunt us 10 years, 12 years later.
Right.
So it would be somebody that would be paying attention to some of the details of what is required for certain kinds of development to happen.
Right.
But I would like to see it be, I know we kind of have a template for code enforcement now. I don't see any reason why this kind of function could not go into code enforcement.
No, certainly it could go there, but we have inspection and enforcement capabilities scattered throughout the county. Mm-hmm. Public health inspects septic systems.
Yeah.
They do the coordinated prevention grants so that that pollutants don't leak into the groundwater.
Inspect my transfer stations.
Exactly.
Well, and I worked with fire marshal people over the years, and you've had some good people in that department, no question about that.
And staff's initial recommendation was that it go in code enforcement.
Yeah. I'd like to kind of focus it in that direction. What I'd want to be sure, though, is that we don't fall into a situation where we have a code and then we have letter of law, and then if it's not the precise letter of the law, but there is a way that we could get an equally responsible outcome, that we couldn't accept that. You understand what I mean? I mean, we have codes, we need to follow those, but on these kinds of issues, if a person had really good sense to find out how to get accomplished what's intended, for example, with some of the conditional use permits, if how you can craft that to accomplish the purpose of what the condition was, and not necessarily follow some steel case template.
Mm.
So, on certain, if it's wiring, you want a steel case template.
Right. No, I think you're saying that creativity and imagination and meeting the requirements of the conditional use permit would be useful.
Very helpful, yes.
And I don't disagree
with
that.
And not somebody that can, just
it'd be situational.
Think constantly in the box. Yes, exactly. Situational.
Could I say something? I think if the board does support a position like this, I think it's important just to take it in steps. Because we talked about hiring it as a project position. And if you look at it in steps, sometimes just taking the first step is the most important. Whether the person ends up under Don or Marty or Heath, initially, I don't think it's going to matter a lot because the person's going to have to come in and initially inventory these CUPs.
Yeah.
And in looking at what they are, what they're related to, where they are, that person will help educate us on what their job description needs to be a little bit, whether it needs to be more over here, more over there, more over there, because they're going to tell us what they find in terms of what those CUPs are. So, I think if you just look at it in chunks or steps, we'll get some help from the individual by just that initial inventory of, hey, this is what I found when I came and looked around. This is how many CUPs there are. This is kind of the status of them.
Mm-hmm.
This is where, my position needs to be funded from. Or because the second piece would be starting to follow up on those conditions and doing the enforcement piece, and that's where they're going to be able to educate us on whether Clean Water Fund kicks in, Road Fund kicks in, or something else.
Don?
Mr. Chair, I just want to point out, I tend to agree with a lot of what Councillor Stewart has said in terms of other parts of the job. And when you first asked me to look at this, I said, initially there may be enough work there full-time, but once you get the CUP squared away and you spend a lot of time initially with these quarries and getting them, then you're going to have somebody that's really in a monitoring stage, mm-hmm. and there won't be nearly the level. like I said, we only have one. Construction is booming. My one enforcement guy is running like a madman to keep up with stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it would be natural. I would probably be coming to you in a year or so anyway, asking for some additional funding for a second enforcement officer anyway. Mm-hmm. And that's when I told you, I said, well, it seems to me that that person can do both. Initially focus for the two-year project, you know, all of their time if necessary, as much time as necessary to get the problem under control, okay, mm-hmm. but also being trained along the way to be able to do some of the other environmental and habitat mm-hmm. and grading permit type things that my one code guy does.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't make, I think for efficiency, for the county's sake, for the citizen's sake, that person could do more than just quarries.
I agree. And really, to a degree, we don't want to get into the point where we just that we take the role of defining this job description and who they're going to report to and all this stuff to the degree that we've crossed over the line of the executive branch who has the freedom to be able to define this. So really our role in this is to communicate policy and intent. At this point, to contrast it with our with the code enforcement general staff that we have for general code enforcement,
exactly.
And to communicate the intent that the first and top priority of this person is unique. It's different than the general code enforcement person. This is a position intended to focus on the special needs communicated by the conditional use permits, the high-profile conditional use permits, where in this case, when you get that done, and that's not just monitoring. When we approved the surface monitoring overlay ordinance last year, we obligated ourselves. That code says we will proactively go out there on a regular basis and inspect. And there are obligations that we need to be able to take that's going above and beyond the normal general enforcement. Because if we don't specify that this is a different kind of a position, then I'm afraid that we'll find ourselves a year or two from now in the same situation where we just have another code enforcement officer doing code enforcement stuff out there, and we're not paying attention to the original problem we're trying to solve, surface mining overlays and those high-profile conditional use permits, ensuring that we are fulfilling our responsibility.
And Counselor, if it's in code enforcement, I can guarantee you that this person will not gradually morph into your typical
building
code enforcement officer. I can tell you that. I can guarantee it. That person will be drafting reports, giving us updates, and it'll be clear whether they're migrating away from the reason we hired them.
I'll reiterate that. If the board decides to hire this person, it will be very clear, whether it's in my department or anybody else's, that the board's intent is for that person to focus on this problem, and that is what they will focus on.
So the title of the position, the job description of this position needs to be clear so that
absolutely.
It doesn't morph into...
Absolutely. And if that person's name is associated with a gripe that a neighbor has because somebody's got a broken-down trailer in their front yard... we'll sit them down and have a chat with
them.
Then
we have a problem.
You've seen this.
Pardon?
You've seen
this. I have.
And we wouldn't actually be doing the hiring. We would tell you what we're looking for with qualifications.
Right.
You would match that with what you know to be the natural qualifications that would be needed.
Yeah, this is an executive function.
This is advisory.
And we're welcoming the participation of the board because... You mm-hmm. are the ones that established the policy when we approved the surface mining overlay. And the requirement to do this was a board requirement. And so you have a valid interest in this, and that's why we're working as a team to get it done.
And it's your determination when a new staff member is necessary to be added, but then that comes through to us as we look at the budget. So that cooperation has to be there.
Exactly.
You know?
Well, DES stands ready to help. You guys decide if you want us to do it. We're happy to take the ball. We do not have to add additional supervisory staff to add an extra person.
Nor does code enforcement.
We can handle that, and I think code enforcement can too. So it's your decision wherever you want to do it. We're happy to help.
I like the idea of it being the bulk of the duties that this person has to do has to do with your department. That's the bulk of the kind of things. So
actually,
for that reason, I like that.
What I would like to do is for Yakult Mountain and for Livingston Mountain, I'm going to pull those conditional use permits, and I'm going to look at each condition, and I will decide, or I'll evaluate whether, yes, they are environmental. And
it's your call.
And if the, you know, if the 50% plus one are environmental, then maybe that's where it ought to go.
I'm good with that. Tom?
Well,
thank you.
All that the arguments that you have here today.
Or I'll have Axel do it.
Yeah, I was going to say. I just heard a sorting project.
You got your 15 minutes.
Okay. Tom's turn to talk here.
Don't tell me how long I talked.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, you were.
Anybody that was here the rest of the day? And I did not talk for 15 minutes.
Anyway,
that's the reason I was opposed to this position all along, because you forget that what you already have in enforcement. You have a commercial enforcement law officer who handles the road. You have environmental services that hires the stormwater contamination. And those are the two things that you are looking at, and you're looking for a full-time person. And that's another reason I was opposed to it, because it's not a full-time position. I don't think it's a full-time position starting off even. But the closest thing you got for getting to support it would be to go back, and I know that we're short a biologist in your department, or a court enforcement person. That'd be the place to put it. But I still think you're missing the point if you think we're going to solve all the problem when half the problem is out on the road. And you're not going back and talking to your sheriff department about your commercial law enforcement vehicle that we have. We have a policeman assigned that goes out there and checks the trucks.
Officer Narimore. Yeah, and certainly that has to be. It is shared duties, but the sheriff's office isn't going to go on site and inspect the wells, inspect the water, and do the things that you listed there. It is a job that is, what you listed is not being done now.
Well, inspections. We have contracts through our department for with labs that do water monitoring, and so the well inspections, I mean, that part of it is environmental. We would send those out and have them monitored and, you know, have the tests done by the labs that we already have contracts with and so on and so forth.
And to Deputy Narimore's credit, he did call. He is working. Mm-hmm. He's got a plan. He's going to ramp up the schedule, and he's concerned and he's aware of it. And there are conditions specific to Deputy Narimore and what he can enforce. In the past, I've worked with him on, you know, there are different certifications or stickers, and Councilor Milk, you probably know about this, but different standards that you have to have saying your truck is safe. And some of the CUP requirements say that, you know, you've got to have the highest standard to come out of that pit. So that's something that he can check if he knows that condition is in the permit. Another one was the Jake brakes and muffled brakes. There can be actual conditions in the permit related to those, and if he knows that condition's in there, then he can enforce that. But it's the communication and the coordination of all those conditions and getting that information to him so he's aware that those conditions are in there and can be enforced.
The code enforcement officer will become an expert on the CUP, and then he would collaborate with Officer Narimore on the road portions of it.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And there's one other function that is the original job description covered very well, and that's conflict resolution and relationship building and those kind of things, somewhat like the sheriff's office had with Shane Gardner, that would go out and build relationships and meet in neighborhood meetings and those kinds of things to be able to make sure there's good, healthy communication going on there, and it's not just simply a complaint-driven kind of a situation. Instead, we're the negative impacts of having a quarry and the trucks going by your neighborhood all day long. That can be so much better when everybody's communicating on the same wavelength and there's investment in those relationships and understanding.
We have a very clear understanding of the problem. We're happy to help. If you want us to do it, we will. If you want someone else to do it, we will support that other department.
Well,
so
I'm assuming
whatever you guys decide.
That's at least each one of us communicate the intent behind this project employee position, and I'm just sharing that's my recommendations for this, and I'm welcome. Do we have a consensus that Mark, you know how to that Mark pursue this and refine it with to make sure that the intention is that the CUPs would be this specialist kind of position that's above and beyond a normal conditional code enforcement person, does the intent there is to make sure that these top priority, high profile conditional use permit permits are enforced, that the negative impacts are covered, and that the proactive responsibilities as defined by our service mining overlay, that is the primary position, the intent to solve this.
I don't have a consensus on that. Okay. really want to leave it with Mark. I think that somebody here indicated that once the CUPs, I think Don said, once the CUPs for the mining are starting to be well managed, this person may have more time on their hands to do other things. Oh, and sure. So I would be confident to just recommending that the county manager, I really liked what you said that you were going to do. Look at those, see how many of them are strictly environmental and how much is related to other kinds of general operation and enforcement activities. And then from that, make a determination where the best fit might be. I know that Tom's concerned about the money for full-time. He doesn't see it, I don't think, continuing on a long-term basis, that, you know, once it's under control. But I do think we probably have other conditional use permits on other land use issues that were approved that we've also not had the staff to follow and make right. sure we're followed up. And those are precisely the kinds of things that drive citizens and neighbors crazy.
Yeah, I think once we dig into it, we'll find that the magnitude of the task is much greater than we anticipate.
Is probably greater and more general, yep. not so much just focused environmentally.
Okay.
I have one request as you go forward with that. I'd like to keep abreast as to the infractions that we find, because we haven't written anything up over the last 5 years of findings that were in violation. We sent people out there over the last 5 years and haven't found any. So I would like to have sure. a report back on these to see if we are still chasing ghosts.
Okay. And the nature of a project position is, and that's an excellent point, and certainly we would owe you that information. If it turns out that of the 137 conditions, 132 are being followed to the letter, and we only have like three or four where they're out of compliance slightly, we hired somebody to fix a problem that isn't as big a problem as we thought. Well, then the project position can be terminated. It's not like we're firing a permanent employee. We'd be yeah. ending yeah. a project.
That's what I was trying to say about taking this in chunks, because it depends, right? Because yeah. that's what I did with Yakult. I went through them all, and they weren't all being met perfectly.
To the letter.
And it depends on which condition it is.
Right.
Some, okay, we can live with that because it's...
Non-compliance here...
But another condition can be very important, so right. it just mm-hmm. depends.
In other words, you're going to learn as you go. Mm-hmm.
And report
do you
finding.
Have what you need to move ahead with this? You don't need our help?
I think we do. The job description is, I think, pretty good. We do need to sort out this building code inspector certification, whether we need it or not. And the
we
other
don't have buildings.
Well, I haven't looked at the conditional use permits. I don't know whether there are building inspections required
or
not.
They're temporary structures. Even the scale is temporary.
So I think... We'll do some, and then I found a typo or two, so we'll do some final work on this.
I assume you have the freedom to fine-tune it or to, it's a draft.
Yeah.
It's in your hands to
look at those.
Continue.
That was on your list.
Yeah, so we're gonna hit the accelerator pedal and get on with it.
Okay.
Probably right. at one point.
Yeah.
So you have the helm.
Okay. All right, good.
We'll get it done.
Okay. Thanks, Don.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you.
We can drop back now to 1.1 for the minutes.
And what are your changes, Councilor Madore?
I don't have any
proposed
I'm good.
He doesn't have them here, but he's going to vote on them.
Yeah, Jennifer's out there.
Yeah, we're batting above 500.
Already
that's good.
With Jennifer before we got
all right. Excellent. That's what she was hoping you'd do that.
So is there a motion?
I move to approve. Board of County Councilors Board Time Minutes of June 3.
Okay.
I don't have the date on my agenda list, but
it's
I'll
right here.
Second that.
Right there. Okay. Any discussion?
Okay.
Do you want to look at it a little bit more first?
No.
He's good.
Okay. All right. Is there all in favor?
You want me to sign it now?
We'll vote yes first.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes. 1.1 is done. Okay. 1.4. Woodland Chamber of Commerce.
So this is a rerun from last week. You remember we got the invoice from the Woodland Chamber, which the funding would go to the visitor's center. The invoice is for $5,000. I think last year we gave them $2,500, and I somewhat failed over the week. I had two rounds of phone tag with Kim Bennett from the Tourism Bureau. I have not been able to confirm with her whether or not they, via a request from us, whether they have analyzed their funding situation such that they could give the visitor center some funding. I did discover that Councilor Madore used to be the board member on the Tourism Bureau, and now Councilor Stewart has had that turned over to her.
Turned over?
Turned over. Recently.
Dropped.
Recently.
Well,
dropped to her, so.
6 months ago, or no, when you got sworn in.
So
when I got the 20, was that the day I got the 26 board assignments?
I think you did end up with the most.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, you're hauling the heaviest wagon. I
so, you know, long story short, I don't know if the question has been asked and answered yet to the Tourism Bureau, whether they could have or will help fund the visitor centers in Woodland. Darlene is here, I think, representing the chamber,
yeah.
I assume, from my experience with her. So, you know, if there are questions there, she's here. But as it stands, we have the invoice. The request is for $5,000.
Okay.
We funded half of that amount last year.
Good work.
Yeah.
Can I offer a little bit of just simply background history? I went back and listened to the audio recording of both board meetings that discovered this, both in the 2013 September and in September 2014. In 2013, the policy decision was made that would be the last year that we would fund any of the Chamber of Commerce, and that we would pay it that year, but then we'd give notice that, okay, we want to make sure that everybody's treated fairly, and the answer is yes, well, they're all really good organizations, but that would be discontinued the next year. The next year, 2014, that decision and that conversation was that we still favored, there was kind of a resurrected reason, well, we don't want to let them go. That Woodland Chamber of Commerce rose above everybody else. And the decision there is that we would match dollar for dollar up to $2,500 each with the Vancouver Tourism Bureau next time. But for that time, because it was short notice, we would go ahead and pay it. And so at this point, and also that came with the, I thought there was a letter that went out, there was some communication that went to the Vancouver Tourism Board at that point that said, this is what we're going to do. Are you going to partner with us? And I was not able to find out whether or not that letter went out and whether or not that message actually got through. I hope that it did.
I recall, if you heard that whole thing, you probably recall that you were in charge of going back to the tourism with Clark County and getting them to fund that. I remember that.
Thank you, Tom.
Isn't that good? Yeah. Yeah.
So the
reason you're quoting what was in that record.
So you're saying that
having failed to do so.
Wait a minute. That was Steve Stewart left in April. Ed Barnes was serving, and we gave Ed Barnes that position.
Uh-oh.
So he was, he was on that board.
Oh, he's not here, is he?
And,
so next Tuesday, you can hit him with that at the hearing.
So I assume that because that part of the conversation was in there, too, that we're thinking we all like the idea because Mount St. Helens tours and all of that,
yes.
We want more bodies to be able to come to Clark County. And in Woodland and frequent those and it was a good thing for everybody. So the question is, and I tried to get in contact with Jeannie Bennett as well. I'm glad you at least had two attempts. being that both of these letters and decisions were happening in September of the previous years, at this point we still have the time to do that research and find out what this scoop is. I would say that
We're way ahead of schedule.
Well, yeah. Although I don't want to delay it.
No, but we have time.
Yeah.
What about? We're talking about their budget.
Yeah, she called.
They're setting up their budget right now. Darlene, can you shed some light on that?
Say something first.
Yes.
You're not funding the chamber. We keep the tourist information separate from the Chamber of Commerce. So the only thing you're funding is the Tourist Information Center, which is probably the best information center, which we've been told that, from Oregon to the Canadian border. And we've got counts, and we got counts on heads and beds and stuff. And this is a partnership which we've done with Cowlitz County, the City of Woodland, the Port of Woodland, and a private business which happens to be Pacific Power and Light. And I just, with as many things that we do on pushing people to Clark County sites, I can't believe Clark County is even debating giving us $5,000, because the City of Woodland gives us $22,000, the Pacific Power and Light gives us $5,000, you know. And so it just seems very logical that this would be something that you would find within your tourist budget or your regular budget.
We don't have
and we are part of Clark County, the City of Woodland, and we don't see too much presence or support for North Clark County. And this might be one thing that you could do.
So that's one of the things that we've dropped the ball on, maybe twice. Ed might have dropped it, you might have dropped it, but in respect to their putting their budget together, what is your...
Well, we've got you in our budget for $15,000 or $5,000.
Yes.
If you don't get it, we'll still survive, but, you know, it isn't fun. And actually, the chamber member at the visitor center always drops at a loss. And with that $5,000 in our budget, we've got about a $10,000 loss on the visitor center, which we pull from the Chamber of Commerce, either through our golf tournament, our Christmas thing. You know, we do fundraisers, and we have our dues. Mm-hmm. So it's a partnership that you ought to be so dang to be proud to be part of. Plus, we operate it way less expensive than you guys ever could, or any government ever could. And it just works. But it doesn't work if everybody doesn't want to be a partner. You know, it should be something you should be real proud of, I think.
Yeah, our intent was to go back to the Clark County Tourism Group, because they were...
and Cowlitz County gives, too. Probably about 13,000.
Yeah, yeah.
So, the big ideas thing.
Yeah, through the big idea. But prior to the big idea, they gave 15,000. So we actually took a little cut when we went into that big idea thing.
So I recognize that our tourism group here has a budget of about $1.5 million. And for some reason, we have failed to go there and apply as a member of that board. This little pittance back out here to the north end of our tourism. That being said, I'd like to pay it this year and go back on the task of saying, hey, we dropped the ball on this thing. Let's keep their budget intact. And this next year we'll go to the tourism and get them to put the money out.
Okay. I've got a question. Because the invoice says Woodland Chamber and Visitor Center. Are they two separate organizations, or the Chamber operates the Visitor Center?
They operate, they're all under the Chamber, but it's a separate, accounting-wise and everything, it's separate, but it's under the Chamber.
And this is mainly for the...
It's only for. And you guys actually quit being members of our chamber, too. So we weren't held in any different esteem than any other chamber. Yeah, because you guys used to be a member of ours, and you're not anymore.
And we don't have a visitor center in Clark County.
I don't know if you do, but they don't work. And the one in Collins County doesn't work either.
Yeah, you have $1 million sitting down here, you don't know where they are.
So basically, you are the visitor center for us.
Yeah.
And so this is for the visitor center. So
completely.
Okay, because I'm looking for the understanding, because we want to make sure we don't just pick a favorite chamber, even though
I know that. I wouldn't mind being it, and you can become members.
The only one we know about, anyway.
But this is strictly. Okay. But we have to do that with the city too. The city can't give us tourists. We get tourist information. You know, the hotel motel tax. We get that, and so we have a separate accounting. We get audited on that. It's separate. Uh-huh.
So I would think it would certainly make sense for our tourism board here for this area. For you to make sure that you have good working relationships with them also, because they also ought to be on board, right?
I know. But see, we were told last year that you were going to do that for us, so we did, that we would build the county.
Here's our representative right here.
And you've asked us what you can do for North Clark County when Carol and I were here, so that's one thing you can do.
Well, I just feel those bus wheels so big today.
That's right. Invitation. It's a taxi cab.
No, that means you threw her under the bus. Is what that means?
No. I'm saying she's our ambassador advocate.
You were the one that told us.
Positive moving forward.
There are no salaries or anything. This is operated all by volunteers.
No, we pay salaries.
You do.
We do. We have two people that make no benefits, minimum, and then we have volunteers. We have
volunteers side that I'm aware of some people who do that.
Yeah, we have, then there's the building, the insurance, the lights, the electricity, and all of that stuff. So, and we allocate it.
Okay, are you going to ask us to give financial support to your golf tournament?
If you want to come play golf, you got to make a team.
Pay to play.
Pay to play, yeah. I think it's $400 a team, and it's and you get quite a bit of that.
Well, if you have it at Tri Mountain, we'll have a team.
So, no, we have it at Lewis River Golf Course.
That's in that other county.
Yeah, it's a wonderful golf course, and the food's good.
I'll be glad to get a hold of Kim Bennett, because I do sit on that board, and I'll talk to her about how this is all connected. And have you built that organization before?
No.
You've had no financial support from them and no communication with them about the need for it.
That's correct. We have built the counties, Cowlitz and Clark, and we built the city. We have built the public entity. We haven't gone beyond that. And we haven't needed to do that with, you know, any other.
Okay. Does the City of Vancouver give you any money?
No, we don't ask for them from them.
Okay.
The only city that we did is the City of Woodland. And we talked about Kalama, and they about had a heart attack, but, you know. We weren't successful, let me say that.
Can I say something here? Because I want to make sure I don't get misunderstood. when I say this is our ambassador here to the Tourism Bureau, it's not thrown her under the bus because she didn't perform. We're still ahead of it. It's because we care enough to send our very best. In fact, I think we can do better than that. I think we can all three of us sign on a letter that we'll all send to the Vancouver Tourism Board, asking them and appealing to them to support this visitor center, because you're the only one in town, you're the only one around. We all benefit when that happens.
I think
let me correct that a little bit. My institutional knowledge tells me that our tourism group here at one point told us they didn't have any extra money. And so we've been funding this thing since I've been here, and before I've been here. And so I think that the right way to do this would be to say that we're going to fund it again this year, and we would like for them to pick it up under the tourism money that they collect here, because it's part of it, and we've been carrying that. But yeah, for us to wait for them to come back for an answer, their budget is incomplete. Yeah. And
our letter would be to encourage them to match ours, would already commit.
Match or pick it up in the year 2016, and we'll take care of it in the year 2015.
Now, are you talking Kim Bennett's organization? Vancouver,
Vancouver, USA, or whatever. The thing to remember is that when these people help fill our hotel rooms, we get the hotel motel tax.
Yes,
we
do.
Not the visitors.
They get nothing.
And they buy food in our restaurants.
Yep.
And buy gas at our gas station.
I get all that.
So that's what I'm suggesting is that we go ahead and take care of it now.
How much did we pay last year?
25.
And now you're going to pay the full five.
We could ask. We give the 25 and ask that the tourism fund it this year for another 25, and for 2016 for them to fund the whole thing under tourism.
Yeah, we can ask them to do that. I would certainly be willing to make a motion for 2,500 from us now. Unless you...
And a letter.
And you...
That we don't sign.
Yeah. That I would make that motion.
I think you just did, and I think it just got seconded.
Okay, good.
Okay, any more discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, motion passes. Aye. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, darling.
Next time, I want 5,000.
You don't get it.
I don't care.
You should be part of the Chamber of Commerce Visitor Center, because you're really good at it.
You know, you have no idea who this woman is.
Oh, actually, I do.
Oh, do you?
You're the only Chamber of Commerce that meets in a different county, in ours.
And we have more attendance.
And you're the model of how to run a Chamber of Commerce.
We are.
You
we
really are. All right, so that's 1.4, and review of letter of support. Okay.
So last week we wanted to bring House
1.5.
Bill, the support letter for House Bill 1645 back. It's in this red folder right here. I talked with you, Councilor Medora, Councilor Stewart. I gave you a copy of it. I don't know if Councilor Milkey's seen the latest version, but basically, we just changed that one paragraph that starts regarding. And
are there two letters in here, or just one?
Just one. It's just one to all of our delegations.
This is where we clarify our opposition to the one.
This deals with support for 1645, which would create a regulatory environment for e-cigarettes and vapor products and help keep those products out of the hands of minors and children. And then the other bill, we wanted to make it clear that we do not support because of the extensive tax increase it would create. However, if they're going to put such a tax on those products, we want to make it clear that some of that should come down to health.
So good job. I'm good with this. And the key paragraph here, let me just read it. Regarding House Bill 2211, actually
that's correct. That's the one, isn't it?
So this one letter covers both bills?
Correct.
Okay. So we address both of them. So on this one, regarding 2211, we think a 60% tax on vaping products would be anti-business, and therefore we cannot support the bill. However, if it does pass, we request that a minimum of 40% of any revenue generated by a vaping product tax be reinvested in local public health systems to support essential public health services. Well put. I'm good with it.
Very well done.
So y'all want to sign it? We have consensus? Looks like we're all signing, so I guess so. That looks like a consensus. Okay, and so we'll take a minute here as we all sign these things. Good job, Axel.
Very.
Some people just initial it. Some people have to sign it. It takes a little bit longer.
Yeah, I turned my initials into my signature. Otherwise, it's all wore out. And make sure you don't mix them up there. There's a few that got signed without my signature. Okay, so where are the first ones where I didn't sign? This one. Okay, we're good. With this, we can mark you on anything?
Pardon me. Yeah, I wanted to share with the board. I should have given this to Peter to talk about, but since he's been our property guru of late, I have a flyer here for a surplus land auction that Public Works is conducting. Two parcels.
Nicely done.
One is Highway 99 and 88, which is a property you're interested in.
Yeah. Well, I'm not interested in it.
You know what I meant.
Be careful how you say that. I'm not going to buy that.
That you would like to see return to the tax rolls. We had it appraised in preparation for this auction, and the appraisal came in $20,000 lower than the previous appraisal, which should make it easier to sell.
Yeah.
Then there's another parcel off of 71st Avenue and 309th Street. And this is a representation of what could be done on the property. You know, a state house, a state home, barn, shop, and that sort of thing. So that's on the 25th of June. So before long, we'll know what kind of interest we had in these two properties.
Awesome.
We wouldn't divide it first and sell individual parcels.
Which one's that?
Either of them, any of them that have larger properties. Divide them to whatever would be the maximum division allowed under the zoning.
I've never heard that question.
No, that's an excellent question.
I don't know what that is. Well, it depends what the zoning is, whether or not you can divide.
Well, the zoning's R10.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
So if our 10 is 20 acres, we probably should divide it. Well, it depends how much is wet.
Yeah.
Looks to me like you might have a wet spot.
That would be a good question for real properties. We could ask real
properties. Yeah, no, I'll get it. That's a great question.
Because if our goal is to maximize a resource, let's make sure.
The appraisal will be based on the highest and best use for the entire 26 acres.
Yes.
If it's subdividable, the appraiser will recognize the additional value. So we don't have to subdivide it before we sell it.
Mm-hmm.
We just take into account the ability to subdivide. So it's worth more if it's two lots than if it's just one.
Mm-hmm.
And so the appraisal took that into account.
Yeah.
Does it also
I know you just gave me a look there. I'll verify that with our real property people.
At this point, it looks like it's gone far enough down the road that you got flyers and you scheduled date for that to sell.
You can't
like it's already
the one
proposed.
Sorry?
Understood that.
You're not proposing that we change it anything
not
about it.
Not now that we've published it. I'm saying in the future, just
they'll
see if it's a factor.
Anybody interested in purchasing that will have a lot more information than what you think.
Let me
ask
you.
Get that themselves.
Do they have the basics of like? Is it? Does it have perks? Is it? Is the legal lot determination already provided? Those basic things that will take away the that would minimize the risk, the unknowns.
They do provide information about the property that there's residual timber access.
Well, the question is: it buildable?
What must have it has buildings on it.
Yeah, no. This is what could be done with it.
Oh,
it's vacant, but it's flat land. I don't.
In other words,
some due diligence has to be
there. There's nothing known about the property.
That's an
like in other properties we've sold in the past, that it's not perkable or it's non-compliant or it's illegal or something like that, right?
The sewer systems that we have available to us today, because they're on top of ground and they're reverse oxygenated, so There's no such thing as perk or not perk.
Yes,
right. There are no known limitations on this
okay,
property.
Okay, good. Because in the past we've known about them, but we did not reveal them. That's not the case here.
Right. This is a public works surplus sale. This is not a treasurer tax foreclosure sale.
Good.
So, okay. Different process.
Good job. Okay.
Give us more money to pay for those collective bargaining things in the past.
So beyond that, I have nothing.
Okay. You have anything?
No.
Okay. Axel?
I'm good.
Peter?
There was a request that came to the board for a letter of support, I believe last board time, or maybe the board time before that, for the proposed Washougal Library. I've talked to some representatives from that group, and because there are a lot of unanswered questions in their letter of support, I recommended that they contact the commissioners directly to present to them directly, and so they could get all your questions answered about that. There's a lot of unanswered questions about whether other organizations support it, what will be the ultimate cost, what is the projected method for getting the funding, because we are talking about the multi-million
dollar. Washougal Library is not part of our Vancouver Library District?
They are, but there's a proposal to build a larger library out there. The only problem is that we're talking about $5 million. Mm-hmm. If they choose a new site, new building.
So they have to raise their property taxes to do it?
And that's an unanswered question. How are they going to raise $5 million? I think
typically
regional library is going to pay $750,000 of that
district
cost,
building
so.
Bond.
Yeah, I think the library on Evergreen was the vote of the people, right?
Yeah.
So no letter then?
Typical.
Not at this point. I said there were too many unanswered questions, and I didn't want to play phone tag trying to relay them. I said the best method they could do is come answer your questions directly. And
I would think that they would provide a information sheet up front first, get their preparation, and then talk to us, then ask for support.
And really, when they get their information sheet, they probably should start with the library board. if Washougal has an interest, because they are...
Well, they are part of the Fort Vancouver Regional Library District, so they're part of
they
that.
They are not?
They are.
They are, yeah.
And so the Fort Vancouver did a study, and they provided them numbers and cost estimates and things to help them come up with a cost projection.
Oh, so it is that far along.
So it is part of that, and they've committed to pay $750,000 out of their regional funds, but that's still out of a potentially $5 million project. You still have $4 million.
Well, and typically in the past, I know before they took action on the Evergreen Library in Vancouver, the appropriate people from the regional library district came and briefed the board on concepts. Because you don't ask for support if they know nothing about the project.
Okay.
How would we support them, though?
Well, maybe
we wouldn't give county money.
With a letter, likely. Anyway, we're approaching 5 o'clock. Somebody want to make a motion
support.
Yeah.
To adjourn?
Well, and they have to bring their capital plans to the county, and you have to vote on that.
Yes, you did.
Did you? Okay.
I did.
Okay. All in favor?
Did.
Aye. And I apologize for making that motion while you were talking.
It's all right.
But it wasn't 15 minutes. I know, Tom, you thought I talked for 15 minutes.
Come on.
Because